on remote from Hospice of Santa Barbara. And it is a beautiful day today, and I certainly hope it is where you are. We're going to be talking today with a wonderful artist, Mariana Victoria Mashek, and I want to thank you so much as a local artist of Santa Barbara for joining us. We are actually surrounded, quite literally surrounded, by your artwork. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Richard. What a pleasure to be here. It is a beautiful day as well.
Your artwork is... I've been captivated by certain pieces that you have here. I think one of them is actually right behind me here. But you work primarily in watercolor, but your motivation, or at least the shall we say, the impetus for your art, and you're here at Hospice, so I would venture that part of the impetus has to do with the transition phase of our lives, which is usually the latter part, the last part, at least in this world, in terms of that which inspires you, in addition to other elements. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, it was an honor to be selected here at Hospice. Excuse me. And what is the force between my work when I sit down in an empty sheet of watercolor paper and I'm ready to compose and paint? Are feelings and emotions, and the feelings here are ones of loss, grief, and letting go. And I try, my goal, my wish is that people can experience those feelings and share them by looking at my artwork, such as the painting She Let Go, which is at the Cancer Center, the Ridley Tree Cancer Center. And it is a woman letting go of a piece of cloth at the ocean, and the clouds are opening up with a lot of color. And there's a kind of a transcendence in that. And the transcendence is to let go of earthly or human, I should say, fear and sorrow, and holding on to this plane that we're in to go through suffering. And through that suffering, there is what I believe is the transcendence. And so I'm really happy to share with people on all levels, share also joy and the history of fairy tales and storytelling.
Well, those are very important elements, especially the storytelling. Fairy tales, mythology. We did a series 5 years ago. I did that with a gentleman by the name of Will Lynn, a PhD in mythology, and we talked about its importance and the necessity of it. And then, of course, the various areas where mythology shows up, areas I had never thought of before. But we also have a lot of mythology, or fairy tales, if you will, around death and dying. Mm-hmm. None of us truly knows what's on the other side. Now, some of us have had experiences, whether they be near-death or out-of-body experiences, that I guess sort of help us to understand that realm.
Yes.
I myself have never had anything like that. However, when people pass, notable people or some people I actually do know, relatives or friends, what have you, my first thought usually, aside from the sadness, is, I wonder what they're going through now. Mm-hmm. I wonder what's really happening. And no one's ever come back, from that experience. We have to take their word for it. And I'm not going to sit here and say whether they did or didn't have that. Mm-hmm. But we all want to know, because there is that voidal awareness, or lack thereof, if you will. All we know is that we hope there's something there. Mm-hmm. It's like we hope there's something on the other side of that wall.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, sort of diving into that just a little bit, and then I want to talk about the exhibit that you have here and how long it'll be here and so forth. But tell me a little bit about your own perspective, mm-hmm. your understanding, awareness, even intuition about I'll use the word afterlife, but there are those who will say there is no other side. It's just, it's all connected, collective, mm-hmm. and so forth.
Well, it's interesting that you would like Rendezvous, that painting right behind you, mm-hmm. because it is actually, in this case, it's a child that's in what I've painted as the clouds or heaven or afterlife, and there's a butterfly that's touching the child. And to me, that's transcendence, and the butterfly being a symbol of life transformation, mm-hmm. and life after death. So it's very close to my personal background was coming from Russian Orthodox tradition, where my mother was a very faithful Russian Orthodox religious follower. And so I didn't really question until I was in college and I took comparative religions and was very interested in Eastern religion and visited the Vedanta temple and studied Zen Buddhism and was really interested in one, the concept of all one,
mm-hmm.
or duality, you know, which is non-dualism and dualism and all of those things, and really also the empty space versus the filled space, where you take Buddhism being the empty and Hinduism being filled with all the deities and all the symbology and the universe just going on and on, and yeah. it just goes on, and lives are reincarnated, and that whole concept. So for me, with the Russian Orthodox, it was a lot of about Christ,
mm-hmm.
especially now we're entering Lent. We just had Ash Wednesday.
That's right, yeah.
And I, as a tradition with a friend, just went to get, you know, ashes at the Episcopalian church. But it you know, so for me, a lot of these things are really beautiful symbols. And I don't know. There's no. I haven't had an experience like that. But I don't know. I know that my parents, I believe that my parents who have passed, support my existence. It's an interesting way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
But are especially with my artwork, etc. I really felt the presence of my mother here, the reception opening.
Mm.
I was speaking of her. And the director, David Selberg, was talking about my artwork and piece for Gail Rink over here, who was director. And I really felt Gail's presence in the room and my mother's presence. So that's about all I, you know, I just know that their life is just, well, for me, it's continuous.
Mariana Victoria Mashek is my guest, and we're talking about an exhibit that has opened and will be here until April 15th at the Santa Barbara Hospice Center up in the foothills of Santa Barbara. Tell us about this exhibit. It is, again, going to be here until Sunday, the 15th of April.
April 15th.
April 15th.
The last day.
They call that tax day. Although I don't know, it's on a Sunday, so they may move it. So tell us a little bit about this exhibit and how people can, if they are interested, find out more about you and the work that you do.
Yes. Well, the exhibit is in the Lay Block Gallery space of Hospice of Santa Barbara, which is behind the Riviera Theater. And check your map so you make sure you take the right turn off. It's not that difficult, but you need to take the right turn off there, right by the Riviera Theater, across from the El Encanto. And it's a beautiful, beautiful space for this work, which I find graceful and joyful. The word grace comes into my mind because mm-hmm. I think the paintings are really, there's a very spiritual quality in this room from the paintings. And it's been a real pleasure to be part of this whole to contribute in my way to an organization that helped my mother so much when she was passing in her last years of her life. Actually brought a priest to the Russian Orthodox Church so my mother could get a blessing, a final blessing. There were no priests at the time. The Dream Foundation and Hospice created a dream for her to have that done. And that was magical for me. I guess magical isn't the right word, but it was a miracle. And
what is it that you want people to take away from viewing the work that you have here right now? And this is probably just a small portion of the work that you have created over the years that you've been doing this. Mm-hmm. And the reason I ask that question is because when I draw, when I put pen or paper, pen to paper, what have you, in the way that I create, I don't think about people looking at it. Uh-huh. I just create it because it just comes out.
Yes.
But what about you? Are you looking for people to take away anything in particular? If not, then what is the sole purpose of your creating this art?
I would love people to enjoy the either the peacefulness or the solitude or grace or joy. Perhaps a landscape that I have here, which is the sunset in Venice, kind of an explosion of beautiful color that they can enjoy in their home and see it every day. I approach my artwork because I love to do it. I love the beauty of water and pigment and composition with pencil, and something that comes through me, I believe, a story maybe that needs to be told in different ways to do that. I have the Russian Swan Princess, which has been done many times, but she has an allegory, a myth, a fairy tale to tell. There's beauty in her feathers and her Russian kokoshnik, the headdress, and tradition. And when people look, there's I'd like them to take away a richness of levels of story, levels of color, levels of line that they're enjoying.
You use watercolor. Mm-hmm. So it is not, it does not have the vibrance, the colors don't throw themselves out at you in a general sense. They're very soft in one aspect. So mm-hmm. It seems to me that the images that you create, even the forest, what is the name of
Tall Trees tall in trees, Georgia.
Even with that one, the colors, the green is wonderful. Although, I'll be honest with you, it does not compare to looking on the hillsides here in Santa Barbara after all of these rains. And that, the greens just are throwing themselves out at you. So it would seem to me that the images that you create with those wonderful light colors, although you do have some that have some pretty vibrancy as well, those are the images are what stand out and, again, tell that story.
Yes.
So tell me about we share a little bit of a background because I wasn't raised in it per se, but I was introduced to it by my first wife, and that was growing up in the Byzantine Rite of the Catholic Church, which many people thought was Greek Orthodox. Mm-hmm. And it's not Greek Orthodox. But I loved the icons. I loved the ceremony, the ritual, the tradition. Mm-hmm. I even have a hardbound copy of the liturgy, which when it was given decades ago is the same as it is done today. Other than the homilies, you know, the sermons.
Yes.
And I've always loved that aspect of the church. And I was born and raised in the Western Rite,
mm-hmm.
a Roman Rite, if you will. But same thing there. I still felt the same way. Still do feel the same way.
Yes.
I'm no longer what they consider a practicing Catholic, but I never left the church in that sense that I've got to get away. It's terrible. It's this. I've never experienced that. I've always found that interesting how people, they push that part of themselves away because of whatever bad experiences they might have had.
Yes. Well, I grew up with my mother painting icons. In fact, two of her icons are here as part of this show as an homage to my mom as well. And there's Saint Sophia and the Resurrection are here. And that's sort of a, I wanted to juxtapose mother and daughter.
I like that. That's
coming from the tradition of the painted, you know, oil paints and the tradition and very rigorous that my mother did paint. She had icons in the church on Castillo Street. Now, there are two churches, and the one that her artwork was in were emigres of from the Bolshevik Revolution, whereas the other church were emigres from the Soviet Union.
Oh.
So those were the older emigres, and then, the, you know, the batch that came to the United States first, and then the second. So my mother's, is, and that church is Vladimir's, and so my mother painted St. Nicholas. She painted Vladimir. He was actually over the door as you go in. And so I grow up on that a tradition. And for me, I'm of the, you know, I was influenced by the 60s and was in school studying art at UCSB during that time and around a lot of abstract artists and, you know, influenced by many genre. And for me, I got very loose and playful with my watercolor, but I come close to my own form of iconography, but in an impressionist way. I would, that's the way I would say it. And so I try to bring a little magic into the impressionist style of my icons or stories.
Well, we also share the Bolshevik Revolution because my wife's father's father, her grandfather, escaped the night before the Bolshevik Revolution. Had he not, probably she never would have existed. And so it's an interesting the way these kinds of these paths intermingle and crisscross and so forth.
Yes.
You know, you talk about icons. The one thing that flashed in my mind was stained glass. And that the watercolors here, although I've seen some pretty vibrant stained glass, we were fortunate when we were in Ireland to go to many, many churches. And the stained glass windows that they have there are just incredible. But we got some pretty, pretty impressive ones here, even at our own mission here in Santa Barbara.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering, is watercolor the only medium that you use to express your art?
It's my preference. Right now, that's what I'm enjoying for numerous reasons. I have painted with a, you know, acrylic. I prefer, for me, I prefer not to be working with oils. I can, but perhaps there are reasons for me. But I really, really enjoy the whole tactile thing of the watercolor paper, the roughness, the texture, the use of just pencil. Not necessarily ink, and pigment and color. And for me, it's vibrant. I mean, that painting of Venice behind us is pretty vibrant.
It is. It actually is, yes.
Yeah. And there's one behind you of Italy, the Amalfi Coast, that's a sunset. So there's a lot you can do. And I like the whole tactile thing. I also like it because you can clean the brushes so easily with water.
Just with water. I actually created, I think I still have it. I created a tactile version of the Tree of Life. Now, I did this with, I think it was with acrylic paint, and I just, you know, and I made sure that it was raised. And I did this for my first wife, who was totally blind, so that she could feel what the Tree of Life shape was. But I find it interesting, too. You talk about it being tactile. Now, obviously, watercolor isn't. Not, at least not in the traditional sense. I think of watercolor when I was a kid in art class, or, you know, as a kid mm-hmm. in grade school using watercolors in art class, it was flat. And now it would wrinkle the paper, okay, because it was wet.
I think you're talking about texture.
I'm thinking texture because, as opposed to tactile.
Yeah, well, I find it extremely, if I can use the word loosely, sensual in the sense that pigment, just even the particles of paint,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether it be cobalt or a rose madder or whatever, you can loosen those little pigment textures. It's a very sensual thing. And the way that it plays, the way that it moves is its own way. Mm-hmm. You can try to control it, but it's, as I referred to in another interview, I call them auspicious accidents.
Mm.
When watercolor takes off on its own and creates perhaps that cloud that you see right over there.
Yeah. I mean, you would think that a rain shower is coming very, very, very soon because of mm-hmm. the darkness, especially near the top of the
But that's all. I mean, I have control with it, but yeah. sometimes not really. And I love yeah. the way that it comes out.
You know what I find fascinating with artists and I'm curious, first of all, how long have you been creating with watercolor?
Oh, gosh, since I was a little girl. My mother would set up still lifes and teach me perspective, proportion, and also the, you know, use of different media. One of her favorite was just a kind of a playful thing with crayons and then an overlay of watercolor, of a dark watercolor that would bring out this kind of magic oil thing underneath. But I've been, since I was a little girl, and then like I always took art classes at all the way through the public schools and then at UCSB, seriously, in the fine art department.
Hmm. I've often wondered about that, and where I was going was talking about artistry. I'm good friends with a local glass blower, Saul Alcaraz, and he has been doing it for close to 30 years or more.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, we all start out at one phase, you know, at a first level experience of that genre, if you will, whether it's watercolor or glass or in my case, I use colored pencils. I also use felt tip pens, colored felt tip pens and so forth. And my issue, or not issue so much as my interest, is in one, the things that influence one. Now, I'm not a student of art. I didn't go to school. I mm-hmm. didn't take any classes. I'm familiar with some of the names, but could I tell you what style a particular artist that I've heard the name of creates in? You know, another woman by the name of Elizabeth Stewart, who you also know. She's, I mean, the woman is so knowledgeable. I mean, I could throw out a name.
Yes,
I could pull out from a book of artists, and I'd say, okay, what's the genre? And she could probably tell me mm-hmm. To the nth degree. But I've always wondered, in studying the other artists, that now you're going to be influenced by what they did rather than the purity that strictly comes through you. Now, that's not to say that if you've been to museums and you've looked at other people's artwork,
mm-hmm.
that you wouldn't be influenced. But in terms of actually going in to a class and saying, today, class, we're going to study the works of Picasso.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, or Rembrandt, mm-hmm. etc. In terms of painting, and so you spend maybe a month, and so now you have just been fed all of this incredible information,
mm-hmm.
and now you're going to go create, and all of a sudden you start, and someone will say, "Well, that has the little leanings of Rembrandt there,"
uh-huh.
or you know, what have you, or Picasso.
Yes,
and it's like, but is that really you? So I'm wondering, with, let's just say, the works that are in this room right now, mm-hmm. has anybody ever made comments to that effect, that, you know, has the stylings of so-and-so or thus-and-such, as opposed to, This is what Mariana created. This is her work. This is hers exclusively. She owes no intellectual property right royalties to any of these other people that she has studied.
Yeah, I think I have to say in all honesty or to my integrity that it is my creation. But yes, I've been so happy to be influenced by other artists. So happy. And it wouldn't be that belongs to Monet, or that is, you know, a ripoff of
right.
so-and-so, Van Gogh, mm-hmm. or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if I could even get one layer of influence from any of those people, I would be thrilled, and it would come out my own way. I think the only way that one can translate it is through yourself, and it comes out different, yeah. no matter how hard you try.
What I found interesting, I was watching this one documentary about art and museums and so forth, and there was this one display. It was like in a corridor, at the end of a corridor, and it was nothing more than a giant white piece of canvas. That's mm-hmm. all it was.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, okay, is that for sale as something that you could use to paint on, or is it actually art?
A statement, right, yeah. of nothing.
Yeah, and I sometimes wonder, and I look at, and since we're talking paintings in particular, I've seen some of the works by some of the great artists, mm-hmm. I'm going to say alleged great artists, because I haven't studied them, so I haven't tapped into that greatness, if you will. I haven't been, yeah. I have not understood it myself. And I've seen some of the work that they do, and I'm going, well, yeah, some of my stuff kind of looks like theirs. Not to say that I've tried to duplicate or anything of that nature, but it what they created looks as primitive as what I do.
Yes.
And I don't consider myself an artist in that sense, in any way, shape, or form. I'm just kind of doing it because I like to do it. So it kind of goes to the aspect of subjectivity.
Uh-huh.
It's like, who said that Van Gogh, why is he a great painter, or Monet is a great painter, or these, I mean, because people liked it. Is it because of the energy they put into it?
I think it's really the unique self that wasn't trying to impress, or wasn't, Van Gogh didn't sell. I think he sold one painting during his lifetime. It wasn't about that. It was about self-expression. And you said that you like, when you sit down with your pencils or your felt tip pens, you like to express yourself.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this is self-expression. I want to express what is it like when you let go?
Mm-hmm.
What is it like when you think about someone who's passed away and you make up that you have a rendezvous? What is it like when angels are protecting a city?
Okay.
And for me, I'm very much in love with, for example, the English Pre-Raphaelites, which were illustrators.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very finely done, and beautiful, beautiful portraiture and figures. And also very much influenced by the Czech Alphonse Mucha, also illustrator, muralist, and Gustav Klimt. You talk about kind of taking someone else's, especially a teacher, that, you know, being careful not to take on their style. But Egon Schiele, Austrian, was a student of Gustav Klimt, and his work is so different, but you can tell there's an element of Klimt's work, which is so mystical and beautiful to me. And Schiele's is very expressive and free, watercolor and emotions and even religious themes, but very loose. So I don't know. I think you just translate yourself.
Okay. Then let's take that to the next step.
Uh-huh.
It is self-expression, mm-hmm. a wonderful phrase to use. So what was it that made you decide to put your self-expression out in front of the public?
It was time.
Okay.
I don't know. That's probably it. It was just time. I've always done personal work. I'd done things for my children, for my mother, for my husband. And now it's time. And I thought, geez, you know, there are a lot of plein air painters in the Oak Grove, and they're all painting Santa Barbara beautiful vistas and Santa Ynez, etc. And so, wow, I have some stories to tell.
Mm-hmm.
I have another way to show I could paint the mission, you know, mm-hmm. but I would like to maybe sneak in an angel mm-hmm. walking up to the mission.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
You know, like, why not? And it doesn't have to be straightforward landscapes of, you know, things that we see, which tourists would like to purchase and remember when they go back to Ohio or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But mine are perhaps someone that wants to remember someone that had passed away, like the painting for Gail, Tall Trees in Georgia, you know?
Yeah. I like that one primarily because of the level of green that's in it.
Uh-huh.
I was actually told that I needed to put green window film on the windows that face the sun on the east and west sides of the home in which we live to bring that hue in because of its healing qualities and
oh,
so
nice.
Forth. I haven't done it yet, but but I thought that was an interesting suggestion by this individual to do that. And I know that different colors evoke different emotions within us.
Yes.
And you're literally across the rainbow spectrum. But are there particular colors that you have an affinity for that somehow always seem to pop up in many of your works? I mean, the one color I do see around the room is blue.
Yes. Well, yes, I love the ocean. I was born in Santa Barbara. I love the ocean. I was just driving down the coast to Ventura yesterday. I was looking out after, you know, the rain, et cetera, and the colors on the ocean were teal and gray and aqua. And I just couldn't wait to try something out on paper that mm-hmm. were those colors. So for me, they're healing. They're beautiful. They're restful. And there we go with the ocean, although it's a very mm-hmm. vibrant purple sky. But I love those colors. As, yeah.
Mariana Victoria Mashek is my guest. We're talking about the work that she's doing and the work that she has on display at the Santa Barbara Hospice Center here in Santa Barbara. And we will be linked to her website. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned. We have more coming up. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. We're on remote today. I always enjoy doing these kinds of programs with Mariana Victoria Mashek, and we're talking about her watercolors on display at the Hospice Center here in Santa Barbara, high above the ocean, incredible views, and with the green, the rains that we've had, the greens that are just abundant. I used to think of the song, the Irish song, 40 Shades of Green, you know, and I'm sure there are more than that because of all of the variants and the hues and so forth and so on. But right now, it is just the most spectacular view of the hillsides that one could when we're driving home, as we were yesterday, and it was still a little cloudy, but you could still see the vibrant greens just throwing themselves at you from the hillsides as we're heading up the 154.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we get up onto Stagecoach Road where we live, and the greens on the roadsides with the grasses and the trees and so forth, and it's just I just can't get enough of that. I'm not a fan of the summertime yellow I just don't, or the fall. Now, when we get into fall, if we have actual fall weather, you know, the cooler temperatures, then okay, brings back some fond memories of yellow grass in the front yard of my parents' house where I grew up. But in the summertime, it's like, I want things green because it's nice and it's warm and that color is just so wonderful. You used an awful lot in the, was it Tall Trees of Georgia? Is that correct?
Yes.
And it's, and then even, and this one here
it's
in front of us.
Keck Park.
Yeah. And there's a place, a location that if you can just spend some time sitting there, listening to the ducks in this pond there, and then looking at
the turtles
as well. Oh yeah, that's right. I haven't been there in a while. It's just, I was circumnavigating this facility. I've been here before, and I made it here just fine before. But for some reason today, my GPS was just not assisting me. And I was starting to get a little frustrated because it's like, it's time for me to be there and set up and so forth. And I thought, okay, just calm down. And you know, you're going to get there. So why don't you just relax and enjoy the view as you're driving around?
Nice.
And so I came around a turn and there was the ocean, just what you were describing as far as your trip to Ventura. And there's the island out in the channel. And I know most people think of the most iconic image that they would want to take home from their visit would be an image of what else but the Mission.
Mm-hmm.
That's not mine. When we're coming down the 154, there's a turn. If you've been up the highway a number of times and you're coming down towards the beach, just as you go past the old San Marcos Painted Cave intersection and you turn and then you're facing just before you make the turn, there's a pullout where you can park and you can see the ocean and the Channel Islands. At noon on December 21st, when the sun is hitting the ocean, and reflecting off of the ocean at that moment, that to me would be the iconic image of Santa Barbara. Because in the foreground, you're going to have the land, the Santa Barbara. Technically, it would be Goleta. Due south of us is Goleta. But nonetheless, it's still the south coast, central coast. The ocean, incredible colors, the reflection of the sunlight off of the water, and the Channel Island out in the distance with the blue sky. And I have been meaning for 13 years to get that picture. I have not done it yet.
Well, you have something to look forward to.
I do. I better do it pretty soon, too. But I know that everybody has their own memories of the places that they've lived or visited. Is there a particular image that flashes to mind for you? You were born and raised here. I mean, I could think of something.
Well, all of it, I think the ocean. But if I'm just at this point, to be quite frank, when I sit down, I'm actually traveling to France in May. So I'm having a flood of images of Paris coming in my mind.
Yeah.
So I did do the piece over there, Poised for Courage, which is on top of the Paris Opera House. And I'm now really thinking about, I know I'm going to be sketching and painting when I'm there, but prior to, that's what's filling my mind. And also I did do quite a bit of artwork having to do with Italy. So that's the Amalfi Coast and Venice. And it's not just Santa Barbara, but I'm quite fond of Santa Barbara. I think internationally it is one of the most beautiful places in the world. So I would say the ocean for me, and the mountains, the islands.
Yeah. Have you been out to the islands?
I've not, and I've lived here all my life.
Yeah, I've wanted to. Both my wife and I want to take one of those excursions out there to spend the day just walking around and experiencing that place. And I've heard the stories of this one woman who lived there for a number of years and was doing just fine, and I guess at one point decided to come to the mainland, and shortly thereafter she passed. You know, I'm not sure why, but living like that must have been extraordinary. I don't know whether or not she expressed herself in any way, shape, or form through art or not. Mm-hmm. But I can only imagine what that would be like. I don't know about you, but I probably would only last maybe a few days, maybe a week, yeah. You know, because I'd want to get back to civilization. I'd want to get reconnected with family and friends and so forth.
Yes.
What about that influence on your work? Now, you said that you had created works for family, friends, your mother in particular, and so forth. Have you been asked by family and friends, hey, could you create something for me that I can put up on the wall? I'm going to commission you now.
Not only do I try to get to the essence of a person, if I were to do your portrait, mm-hmm. it might be a little bit of a caricature, but I would be pulling who you are, how it is for me. What do I feel from you? Mm-hmm. Is it strength? Is it curiosity? Is it being able to speak? You know, things like that. And so I play with that. I have twin autistic grandsons. And my dream is to do a story mm-hmm. about twin brothers that are autistic. And so I play with things. My first gift, such as what you're speaking, was a cookbook for my mother and my two sons of my mother's recipes, Russian recipes, each illustrated by a Russian fairy tale. So each image, as you see, when you walk into this exhibit, there's a small view of Russia on the first day of the year in the snow. It's the new year. And there are borders going around the edges, which is a tradition of Russian painting that I tried to emulate, or I don't want to say copied because it's part of me, but I did do it with the borders. And there are all the landscapes of the mountains and the wildflowers going around. So each recipe had a different view of perhaps there's one sketch of two lovers, and the man has a balalaika, and the woman is looking up adoringly at him. So I tell stories, and that's what I want to do, mm-hmm. such as the Swan Princess, and telling stories about what is it like to be at the end of a love affair. What is it like to let go of your fear of mortality and suffering? I'd like people, when they step in, to identify somehow, you know, I'm going through that. My goodness, that tells me a lot. It's not the mission.
Yeah.
But it's pulling at my heartstrings.
Yeah. Yeah. Evoking some kind of, is the right word, visceral response?
Well, I think when in the interview with Mark, he referred to it as painting from deep feelings of grief, sorrow. I mean, I've gone through a lot, as we all have, and it comes through me into this media that I've picked. You know, I could set up a still life and paint some pretty flowers, mm-hmm. you know, and have them be bright pink and lots of green and whatever. And someone could say, oh, that's a nice still life. Or it could be a painting of someone that's just gone through the death of a spouse. And there's something in that painting that is magic for them.
Yeah. How has your artwork, the work that you do when you sit down to paint, how has that, and you've described it to some degree already, but how has it helped you to work on those elements of suffering and trauma and the challenges of past experiences in that regard, in terms of, shall we say, if not freeing you up from those things, you're not carrying them around anymore, at the very least, a better understanding of them.
Correct. I think it's all part of the acceptance, I believe, that going through this process that hospice is so great helping people heal is it's an acceptance. It's something that's with you. I've lost a child, which is a very, it's something you do not get hop, skip, and jump, and you get over it. You know, every day is as learning to live without someone so close and dear. Very, very, very hard. But with acceptance, with learning how to live, is my self-expression, my wanting to share with other people. People come here to be in group support groups, to talk to a counselor, to deal with things that are very hard. And so my artwork is like, hey, we're all in this. We're all human beings. This is not an easy ride. Look, I know solace for solitude is a place I dreamed up. I saw a photograph. It is France, but it's a place to go to for refuge, to calm yourself, to be with the situation. There's no escape. You know, there's no escape from life except to end your life, but then you've got that too. You know, some people say it's karma.
Yeah, well, yeah, it can be. And that's an interesting thing you bring up, because as we were talking earlier about knowing or not knowing, if after this life it's lights out, we're not going to know anyway. You know, there's no way of knowing if when we leave the body or the body ceases to function and it's just darkness and there is no more. But from my philosophical perspective, that doesn't make any sense. With everything we've talked about so far in this interview, that facilitates the fact that our lives have meaning. There's meaning and stories and all kinds of wonderful information in each one of these, and emotion in each one of these paintings that are on the wall around us.
Mm-hmm.
And then to say, oh yeah, and afterwards it's just lights out and that's it. My brain just can't wrap around that concept. I'm of the belief, and again, it's a belief and not a knowing, that there is something more. It doesn't make sense that all of this would exist and all of what you've put on these canvases would be coming forth if this was it.
Well, and what comes to my mind quickly was we were talking about other artists, and so I think about Van Gogh. And Van Gogh, as you know, had really severe mental problems and was institutionalized and had one tragedy after another, and his work did not sell. Nevertheless, he kept painting and he kept painting however he wanted to paint. And he didn't try to, was this good, or does this look like somebody else? Or I believe that he's more alive after his death, because it was only then that his artwork was embraced by the world and continues constantly to be admired. I mean, to go to see the irises in Pasadena at the museum, people are standing there. You know, I was in New York at the Museum of Modern Art. Yeah, it was. And, you know, there were 50 people standing around the Starry Nights.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it travels around the world. He's alive.
Yeah. I often wonder about the lives of these artists and how their lives compare with people's impressions of them today when looking at the work that they've left behind, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know what? I hope that my work creates miracles and continues, and who knows, you know. We'll see. I want to leave a body of work. I want my grandchildren to be proud of their grandmother and how she interpreted experiences.
Mm-hmm.
My little 6-year-old granddaughter is in love with the sunset in Venice. And I thought, my goodness, it's kind of a, you know, mature look at Venice. She loves the colors. Mm-hmm. They're playful.
Yeah.
And she loves the two birds here, which are my little way of gratitude, you know, my little pair, my little couple, mm-hmm. you know, and she loves those. And so I want to touch people's hearts.
Mm. People do it through a lot of different ways, music and writing and obviously sculpting and in your case, painting and so forth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one hopes that, I used to think about that and just have the conversation about legacy, you know, not so much, some people phrase it in many different ways, you know, but I often wonder, if thinking about what kind of a legacy do I want to leave, as opposed to just doing whatever it is that you do, because you know you're going to leave it behind, all right, and just making it meaningful. I know that, I guess it's part of the ego that kind of creeps in, and this is one of the things that I think about, and I've thought about for some time, that has actually helped me to stay humble, and I'm thankful for the universe that when I start to get a little too big for my britches, the universe brings along an experience that
yes.
says, excuse me, you know, no. And I'm grateful for that. I am where I am, not through the work of my own hands.
Yes.
I am where I am today because of thousands of people who have had an input into my life.
Yes.
There's one woman in particular that I think of going back to my early 20s. Her name is, I'm venturing, she's probably long since passed, but Margaret Pekarik. And she suggested that I go to Toastmasters, that she liked what I was doing, but that I could use some fine tuning and some refinement. So I went, had a great time. It was really fun, and all of the engineers and other producers and board ops and general managers and all of the other people and the listeners too, family members. In terms of the work that you're doing, obviously your family obviously has an interest in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned that doing portraits. For people, you know, you would do portrait of someone. But what if someone said, look, I don't want you to do a portrait of me. I want you to create a piece of work for me mm-hmm. that I can hang on my wall, mm-hmm. not only to remember you by, mm-hmm. okay, family member, relative, but, and so where does Mariana's intuition come in to all of this
okay.
to work on this?
Well, so this is a great, this is, aha, I just thought of an example. And that is a very dear friend and wanted me to paint for her daughter, a mother and daughter mermaid. So here we go into magic realism.
Yeah.
And that her daughter loves mermaids. And so I was given, you know, some photographs and of their faces, etc. And I painted the mother, and the daughter is reaching out and holding on to the mother and trailing kind of behind her. I decided to put in the mother's hand the Tibetan conch of wisdom, the shell,
mm-hmm.
in Tibet. And that is wisdom. And to me, it was the mother passing on wisdom to the daughter. You see, so it's not a portrait.
Right.
It's a story
mm-hmm.
of the mother and the daughter. The daughter's reaching out for the wisdom of the mother, and they're floating in sort of a fantasy seaweed garden underneath the water.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my interpretation of a portrait. So when I say, if I were to do you, maybe it would be with your, you know, your hat and your dog up on the mountain, sitting on a rock, looking out at your favorite vista on December 21st and contemplating what you're going to say next. You see? So I don't do portrait
right.
as such.
I see what you mean.
I tell a story about gotcha. The person.
I like that. I can actually see that. I can actually see what you just described.
Well, you maybe want to commission a painting, Richard.
Do you paint strictly from the mind's eye, the intuition's eye, or do you use photographs where
I use a photo or go to a place I did for Alice Keck Park, that which is my mother's favorite place, and that's actually me thinking about my mother. Those are memories. Those orchid blossoms are loose, they're flying, and those are memories. So I'm thinking about Mom by the gazebo. She loved the turtle pond. So I do use reference points. Maybe a photo, like that's Ivoire, France, and I'd never been there. It's by Geneva, I was told. But it grabs me, and then I go from the mind's eye. You know, I'm not referring, I'm not copying the photograph.
Right.
I'm like looking at the likeness and then putting it away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are there images or symbols that you like to incorporate into each of your paintings, or is each one that unique? You know how some will, many artists, they'll put their little signature down in the lower right-hand corner or left-hand corner, what have you, or they'll, let's put it this way. It's kind of like Stan Lee, the creator, the comics creator.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He has made a cameo appearance in most all of the comic strip movies that have been made, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you know, that's one of Stan Lee's.
Yeah.
What about you? What is there something within your work that someone could say, oh, this is one of Mariana's?
Well,
this is a Mushek.
Yeah. No, I would say, here we go with the ocean colors.
Mm-hmm.
No, I always have my signature because I was
sure.
reprimanded at one point that I better put it on there. And because I was beginning to illustrate for publication and that kind of thing. And so, and my goal is to do personal work, like mm-hmm. brochures or book jackets or things like that. And they're obviously, my trademark would be the fact that they're very, you know, I think it was referred to as wistful or whimsical. Whimsy. I had a story that was in one of the publications in Santa Barbara, and that's, you know, whimsical, wistful, and I think the colors lend themselves because they're not, you know, red, green, yellow, mm-hmm. you know, but more blended colors, and I don't want them to be all the same. I want them to be different. Probably just my signature. I don't really have an icon going on.
Have you ever finished, or let's say maybe you're in the middle of something, and at the last minute, so to speak, you say, well, yeah, but I'm going to change this.
Yeah, many times.
You will take that canvas and you will throw it aside and say,
yeah,
no, I'm going to start over.
Yeah. No, that happens. I want to fall in love with a piece that I'm working on. And when I'm really I really feel, okay, that God is working through me, I'm going to throw that out. You know, it's a big statement.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something, it's not my ego, it's not my, you know, little pitiful self. It's mm-hmm. something really grand.
Right.
Something really great is happening. And I'm in love with that piece. I'm going to keep coming back to it. I'm not going to say, this is not happening. But I have a piece right now I'm going to approach in another way.
Mm-hmm.
Something about the proportion, something about the composition didn't jive.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, and I just say, okay, another try, you know. And
do you just pick up the brushes and start, or do you sketch it out on a pad or anything?
No, I normally have a composition in mind. So it's like, you know, placement and mm-hmm. proportion, and you know, and from then on, my illustrations for the cookbook I often outlined with, especially with the borders, they were meticulous, and so I might even outline a little bit with fine point ink, but not much. I like pencil because it's soft, and the graphite I can smudge or not smudge, and so anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting that maybe it's because of the ease. It's like what you talked about with watercolor. It's so easy to clean the brushes with just water, right? Mm-hmm. For me, I don't want to use any liquids. I want to have it neat and clean from beginning to end, so there is no real cleanup per se. Although if I'm using pencils, I'm going to have to sharpen them, and I actually have a little sharpener that I do that with, so I've got the shavings left over. But my challenge, and maybe this is where art class would assist in someone's betterment, my challenge is in drawing the aspects of the human form.
Mm-hmm.
I actually did draw, and it was not intended as a caricature, it's just that's the way it came out, of my second wife.
Oh.
More of a bust type.
Okay. Yes, yes.
And it was okay from that standpoint. She liked it. You know, unfortunately it didn't last, but I've tried to work on those kinds of things, like mm-hmm. you know, getting the shape of the chin, or even trying to do a self portrait with the beard without any hair on top and so forth, and the glasses, and the best closest thing I've come to is more an app that I found that actually allowed me to choose all of the different parts and create a little avatar. And that looks pretty good, but I had nothing to do with creating those parts that mm-hmm. came together to make me. What about, I mean, because each one of these has what seems to me to have the, especially with the human form, mm-hmm. the proper perspective, proportion, mm-hmm. angles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
It's lots of figure drawing, lots yeah. of classes that are life drawing, lots of classes.
I have a pad that's got pages of all little pieces of the human anatomy.
No, it's, you know, lots of days of drawing the figure. And my mom was very good at portraiture as well, and including animals, but it's just doing it and doing it and doing it. And
I have often seen the time lapse photography of an artist using pencil primarily mm-hmm. or pen, and they start drawing and they're doing a human form
mm-hmm.
and it just is going and flowing, and it's going
yeah.
and you think, okay, that's going by awful fast, but and they didn't make any mistakes.
Yeah.
Or at least it's hard to tell whether they made any mistakes because it's going by so fast.
Yeah.
Do you ever run into a situation, this is more in the structure and process, where you have to correct something in it?
Oh, yes.
Color over
right,
it?
Yes, right now I'm working on something specific, actually a specific person in a dancing situation,
mm-hmm.
dancing, beautiful gown, etc. And I'm really spending time on making the proportions correct, and also the flow with dancing. You want it to really, you know, be exactly that. The painting here, Breaking Away, the main point was not so much the movement, except for the movement of the expression on the face, which was of an emotion, which is to let something go, to break away. But in the case of the Swan Princess or a flamenco dancer, it's going to be a lot of movement in mm-hmm. the dress, and I do love fashion, so a lot of times dresses are going to come into my
yeah.
head.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I do spend time. I do change them.
So this is where all those art classes that you took really do pay off from that standpoint, that you are able to master the human form in particular.
Well, continuously learning
as
I'm doing it. Because it is a moving process. And you need to be sketching a lot. I mean, serious artists, professional artists, are keeping sketchbooks. They're taking that with them rather than a cell phone, you know. I mean, I'm sure now that everybody has a cell phone, carries it all the time. But an artist would have the sketchbook, you know, and be sketching as they're sitting and, you know, observing.
Yeah, I have all of the elements that I need, pads, pens, and so forth, in this giant zippered folio bag, if you will, that has been sitting in the same spot. And I keep meaning to put it in the truck so that if I've got it with me, if I ever want to pull it out, I stop somewhere. And just sit there. And then I'm also trying to create a space in my home, in my studio, clearing off one of my desks, which is for whatever reason taking forever to do because there's not that much on the desk, and put one of those desktop easels so that I can draw more vertical, or at least at an angle, horizontally, maybe at a 45 or something like that.
Yes.
Sort of like a drafter's table, but not quite as large.
Great.
And that seems to me to be the one thing, one piece of advice that writers give as well as artists give to people who are struggling with trying to get everything positioned. I'm going to put this in the right spot there. No, it's not right. And they spend most of their trying to get the structure, the form of where they're going to create.
Yes.
And they don't create. And that's one of the things I've heard from, for example, writers is, just write.
Yes.
In the case of a painter, just
sketch
paint.
Sketch and paint. Sketch, sketch, sketch. Can't get enough of sketching, really, because that's, if you're doing figurative, I mean, if you're just playing with color, you know, it's a different thing, but figurative painting, you know, taking realistic elements and putting them into a more impressionist setting.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Mariana Victoria Maszek, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program. It's been a pleasure to not only sit here and chat with you, but also be surrounded by the works that you have put yourself into, your energies, your emotions, and so forth. And I do encourage people to come up. When this exhibit leaves, where else will they be able to see your work displayed?
I will be having a summer show I'm very happy about at the Santa Barbara Tennis Club in the months of July and August of this year. So I will be painting for summer right now. I've just begun, and that show will start at the beginning of July, and that's the Santa Barbara Tennis Club.
We'll be letting people know about that as well. We'll also be letting people go to your website, which is, of course, your name, Mariana Victoria Maszek, .com. And they can see the fine works, as well as if they see something that they like, can purchase. Are these one of a kind?
Yes. Well, you know, these are archival prints of originals.
Okay.
So they are all numbered archival prints in that is that edition.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are for sale.
Okay. Go to MarianaVictoriaMaszek.com. As I said, we will be linked to her website. So you folks can certainly check all that out. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.